Wisconsin's underground water supply has come under increasing pressure from lots of things, from development, from agriculture, from high-capacity wells. There was a bill in the legislature by Senator Mark Miller and Representative Spencer Black intended to toughen a 2004 law regarding our underground water supplies. That bill is we'll hear the situation with that bill coming up in just a minute as we visit about it, but really also in general about Wisconsin's groundwater, its quality and its quantity, where we are, what we can do to preserve as much as we can of it. Three guests for you, two in the studio with me. Jody Habish-Sinikin. Hi, Jody. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Larry.
She's an attorney retained by Midwest Environmental Advocates. It's Wisconsin's sole public interest environmental law firm to work on public policy matters and environmental actions arising in Wisconsin. She's worked on the Great Lakes Compact. I think she was on to talk about that, perhaps. She's also served on the Groundwater Advisory Committee, so great to have her back to be with us. Ken Bradbury, hydrologist and professor with the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey with UW Extension. And Ken, great to have you with us.
Glad to be here, Larry.
And finally, with us by phone, Darren Von Rudin, who is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. And Darren Von Rudin, thank you for taking time to be with us as well.
Yep, no problem.
Well, really pleased to have you, all three of you here. And so as you can see from the introductions, as you listen, these folks represent a broad array of interests and knowledge relating to our groundwater. And so I'm really pleased to have the different perspectives with us today. If you certainly have questions or comments, I hope you'll join in with them. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us as well. The email address is talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. And Jody, let's start with you. Can you give us some background a bit on the water and the water bill and where we are?
Thank you, Larry. Well, with less than 2 days left of this legislative session, we heard the bad news just the other day that this groundwater bill that we had worked so hard on, that was introduced by Senator Miller and Representative Black as a culmination of years of work by the Groundwater Advisory Committee, by our state's DNR, by Wisconsin scientists and water experts from across the state, has remained locked up in committee, prevented from reaching the floor vote this session. The failure of this groundwater bill to proceed out of committee is a true shame and says a lot about what is truly upside down about our legislature today.
Well, now that bill was really there was a bill in, 2004 we had a water bill, wasn't that? Is that right? And this bill was supposed to kind of toughen that?
That's correct.
The new bill?
The bill you're referring to is known as Act 310. It's the groundwater quantity legislation of 2004. And as it was written, it was a first step at regulating and managing our state's precious groundwater resources. It left a number of questions. It sought the creation of a groundwater advisory committee, which I participated on, as well as collaboration with the technical advisory committee, which Ken Bradbury and other water experts were on as well, to go after some of those remaining issues.
And Ken, as a hydrologist, I know you're very familiar with our groundwater supply. And there are, maybe we talk a little bit about some of the issues we've got. I know there's some radium-laced water in the southeast, for example.
Sure. There's a number of different issues around the state, Larry. And one of the things we try to communicate to people is that Wisconsin has a really fascinating and varied geology and hydrogeology and different rocks in different places. And that means the groundwater has different, there are different issues in different places. You mentioned radium in southeast Wisconsin, and that's coming from deep aquifers where people in say, Waukesha County have very deep wells drawing from a deep sandstone aquifer. Water levels in that aquifer have dropped hundreds and hundreds of feet over the last century, and those wells are now drawing in some radium, forcing that part of the people in that part of the state to now use shallower wells, which could have more impacts on shallow lakes and streams and wetlands. That's a different issue than we see in central Wisconsin, where there's pressures from irrigation pumping on shallow lakes and trout streams and so forth. And there's actually been some lakes that have gone dry up there. Mm-hmm. Right here in Dane County, we have a moderate amount of drawdown from municipal wells, but we see impacts on our some of our lakes and streams and wetlands here as well. Places like up north, like Taylor County, have are places where groundwater could be hard to find, and some of those places are having trouble finding enough groundwater. So our there's a lot of different problems around the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Darren Von Rudin, and again, thank you for being with us. Darren, again, president of Wisconsin Farmers Union. Maybe you could talk about this from the farmer's perspective as well.
Yeah, well, you know, as a family farmer and just doing a little bit of background work on this issue, we look at the situation where large corporate ag is basically coming in and wanting to swallow up as much water as they can. And there's been instances around the state where neighboring wells have been dried up because of a high-capacity well going in nearby, and then family farmers are forced to drill another well to get below their level so that they have water. And with you know, the current legislation, there isn't anything in there to protect neighbors, whether it's a farmer or just a private individual home, from an instance like that. And this bill was sent forth to help with remedy some of that to make sure that all people have an equal share of the water supply. And as farmers, too, you know, water is vital for our businesses. And I think, in the you know, as far as future goes, we need to make sure that our water, groundwater is protected in the state to be there for our kids and our grandkids.
Yeah. So obviously, the Farmers Union then was in support of this bill.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. So what's been the holdup on it? What's the holdup here? Why did it get tied up in committee?
Well, I think the biggest part of it was from the bigger ag interests that don't want to be limited on their water supply. They want to be able to just drill and do whatever they want, wherever they want. And if we don't do something to protect our groundwater, we could be in the same situation that California is currently in out there, or like other countries around the world have been in the last 20 years, when they've allowed too much or overpumping of their groundwater systems, they end up with water issues that affect them for decades, or even anywhere from 5 to 10 years, I should say.
Yeah, Ken, do you know what do we know about our underground water supplies here in the state?
Well, we have very plentiful groundwater. That's actually one of the problems with people's understanding of this bill. I think they look around and they see Wisconsin's a very water-rich state, and in most places of the state, groundwater supply isn't really a huge issue. It's only in parts of the state. But in those parts of the state, it's very important.
It's a big problem.
And there are really no resources that's really more important as to people's livelihoods and living and everything else than groundwater. The other thing that's important to understand is that groundwater and surface water are just directly connected in our state. And so anywhere now, if you go around in today where it's a nice spring day and we haven't had much rain for a while, and you look at almost any stream in Wisconsin, you're looking at groundwater that's supplying that stream. Keeping those streams flowing is really important.
Yeah. And Jody, do you want to make comment too before we go to the phones on this? Or?
Well, it's really an answer to your question to Darren and Ken in terms of what the holdup is. And it really is something that has us scratching our heads, because the bill that was advanced by Miller and Black really is just a statutory or regulatory framework that allows reasonable, intelligent management of our most precious resource. And we know that groundwater provides drinking water to 70% of Wisconsin citizens, supplies water for businesses and industry in 97% of our Wisconsin communities, as well as provides the springs and the lakes, the rivers and the streams that really supports our tourism industry. So what the bill really was trying to do was to provide a a sustainable water supply and balance competing uses. So it's not just the first or the biggest users. It's also the family farmers. It's the property owners whose lakes are dwindling. It is communities who are experiencing water quality issues already. It's trying to be forward thinking and allow some human eyes to evaluate harmful impacts before they proceed to the point where it becomes so costly, so big, that it's difficult to deal with them.
Well, we have every one of our lines is filled, and so we should take some calls here. Jerry and Aaron's been waiting the longest, so we'll go to Jerry. Hi, Jerry. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you today?
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question. I live in the town of Aaron and have a tree farm down here, and I have a tree farm in Washera County on 40 acres. And next to my 40 acres is about a field of over 300 acres where they raise potatoes and whatever for Frito-Lay, for potato chips. And they just pump water out of that thing like crazy. Is that I want to move up there eventually, and I was wondering, does that affect my well that I want to drill someday or what? Because the fellow told me how many thousands of gallons a minute they pump out, and it's just seems ridiculous, but I know they have to have it for their crops, but is that regulated by the DNR or somebody?
I think I can take that.
Okay. Ken Bradbury?
Yep. The amount of pumping is the DNR has to approve the capacity of the well, but actually the amount of pumping is really not directly regulated. As far as whether it'll affect your well someday, it all depends on how deep your well is and where it is with respect to the pumping. And it's these are all things that we can predict. One of the pitches I like to make is that we, as a hydrogeologist, we have a pretty mature science, and we really can predict these things if given the opportunity to do so.
All right.
Okay. Well, I just wondered about that. I was up there last weekend, and they had put a winter rye crop in, and they dished it up last Friday and Saturday with the wind coming out of the northwest at about 50 miles an hour, and it turned into a virtual dust storm because it's all sand up there. So to me, it was just a waste of the water they were putting on because it evaporated immediately.
Well, I don't know quite what to say about that. Most farmers do care about the. About how much their water they're using. Of course, it's a cost to them for pumping and so forth. So you know, modern farmers are using a lot of techniques to conserve water as well. It's just that we all need to manage this water because, as you say, it's important for everybody. It's a shared resource, and anytime you have a shared resource, you need to have a way to make decisions and share that resource.
Yeah. Thanks, Jerry, for calling. Let's turn to John in Pewaukee next. John, hello to you.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question and maybe a social comment that you might discuss. Hoping to do this quickly for you. The question is, do we need more water? And I know that might sound at the face really ridiculous because everybody needs water and our population's growing. We need more and more all the time. But in an urban setting, I'm thinking that, you know, we're using low-flow toilets now and making big progress in our water usage. But I'm thinking that we still, each household is probably using way more water than we need, but I have no statistics about that. So my question is, in an urban setting in Milwaukee, for instance, Waukesha, are we using too much water? Can if we change our minds a little bit and pull together, could we use less water in our homes? The comment I want is, I think when I was in college, I had a professor, my favorite professor, he said water could be destroyed, and he got up in front of class and really pounded his books in front of him and me. It drove home the point that our water understanding is built with a lot of misconceptions. You think it just will run endlessly and that we could never destroy it, but the fact is we can destroy our water resources, and yet we have this prevailing attitude that it's just going to be there forever and that we're all entitled to as much water as we can use. So yeah. I'm thinking with in regard to this bill, maybe that attitude that prevails, in my opinion, that water is there for everybody to take and there's going to be so much, maybe we still have that kind of misconception, and your guest can address that notion that we misconceive this water, and we need to change our view, a new paradigm, if you will. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Jody, let's turn to you for a response first.
There's no doubt that what this caller is talking about is what we're all hearing more and more about, that we live in a world of increasing water scarcity, and our own country is already experiencing a situation where at least 36 of our states are facing significant water shortages in the next 5 years. So there's no denying that water, and specifically groundwater, which supports so much of our environment and our industry and farms and lifestyle, needs to be protected. So the question is, how can we do it? How can we make it sustainable, lasting for future generations in a way that recognizes, as Ken just stated, that it is shared and it is finite? And that's the challenge, and we do need to provide solutions, legislative regulatory solutions, to allow this resource to be shared in a way that's intelligent and that avoids harms, serious harms, before they get out of hand.
All right. And we'll take some more calls here. Thank you very much, John, for calling. Kathleen and Townsend, we'll get to you, and Stella, we'll get to you, and from Sturgeon Bay in just a minute. But just to remind you, talking about Wisconsin's groundwater quality and quantity, about the bill, the water bill that's tied up right now in our legislature. Jody Habish-Sinikin, an attorney retained by Midwest Environmental Advocates. Ken Bradbury, hydrologist with the UW Extension, and Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Unions, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As we talk about Wisconsin's water, underground water, I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments today as well at 1-800-642-1234. You know, our last caller, we didn't really kind of get to that part of it before he left. It had to do with conservation and water conservation. And I think, Ken, I can start with you. Darren, you may have some comments as well.
Yep.
But Ken, comment from you?
Sure, sure. Well, the last caller specifically asked about Milwaukee and Waukesha and conservation in urban settings. And first of all, I should tell you that the Southeast Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission, or SEWRPAC, has recently done a big water supply study, and conservation was a big part of that. And there are lots of ways that cities, people in urban settings, can conserve water, but there seems to be a limit. As the more research is done, it's something on the order of 60 gallons a day per person is about what everybody tries to hit for a mm-hmm. a conservation effort. So those are efforts that are important, and they certainly are going on.
And a comment from you, Darren?
Yeah, well, you know, as farmers go too, you know, one of the things that we normally look at too is, you know, especially the irrigation part in the central part of the state, and even northwestern Wisconsin too, where there's some irrigations going on. You try to make sure that you don't put on too much water. In the sandier soils, it filtrates through a lot faster, so you have to put so much on a daily basis in order to get your crops to grow. But, you know, if the weather's right and Mother Nature helps out from above, then we don't need to use quite so much water. But, you know, I think one of the big things that everybody needs to look at is that conservation part of it, whether you can cut down on the amount of water you use for washing cars and watering the lawns, or if you need to just to take a bath instead of a shower so you don't use so much water.
Thank you for that comment as well. Kathleen and Townsend, now we turn to you. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for waiting.
That's fine. Thank you. My question deals with the Northern Lakes. About 8 years ago, my husband and I moved to Townsend, and we have a lot of surface water. We have about 24 lakes there. But our groundwater, I believe, is under threat because we have 2 or 3 bottlers in the area, one in Mountain, one in Blabino, and then now I guess there's another one toward Crandon. And what my question is how are these regulated? Because here you have a private company which is actually drawing out a private resource for sale, and that water will never, ever come back. Some of our most beautiful lakes, like Archibald Lake and Lake Lucerne, are down not inches but feet, and people blame the bottlers. So I guess I have a question about what impact bottlers have on smaller areas such as ours.
Okay, start with Jody.
Well, thank you for this important question because it is a concern we hear again and again in terms of the impact of bottlers and other large, high-capacity well withdrawals of groundwater, because we all know, and Ken can certainly talk more about this, our surface waters, as you're describing, are absolutely connected to the groundwater system. So when they're being pulled out like giant straws from a shake, it's drawing waters from those surface waters, the precious ones you're talking about in your area, for example. So the question is, what can we do about it? What is the regulatory framework that's available to us as citizens and our state and our DNR to try to limit these impacts? And Act 310, which we mentioned was passed in 2004, does provide for a regulatory framework to first deal with those, because it does allow for there to be a screening process under administrative rule. NR 820 provides a list of questions and a screening process for wells proposed in certain limited areas. For example, near a spring that meets certain high threshold requirements, within 1,200 feet of a trout stream or outstanding or exceptional resource waters, or here it goes to your question, if it will have a high water loss, bottlers.
Mm-hmm.
So that does trigger NR 820 screening process, and the state should be evaluating risks of significant adverse environmental harm, which is a fancy catch-all phrase for impacts. Impacts to water quantity, quality, temperature, chemistry, all those that support ecological function, as well as the recreational and commercial needs for those waters.
Yeah. And Ken, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, just to follow up a little bit. Of course, as the caller knows, northern Wisconsin has been in a drought as well for several years. And we're hearing reports all the time of low lakes and low groundwater levels. And, of course, that's a natural thing, although who knows, with climate change, it could be worse. But the groundwater withdrawals for bottling are then on effects on top of that. And so one of the things that the science does for us is we can sort out, you know, which is causing more effects and how are they put together. But as Jody said, it's important that we have a regulatory framework for these things as well as the science to help us sort the different effects out.
Yeah. And Darren, did you have a comment?
No, I think they pretty much covered it.
Yeah, they did a good job there. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, we turn to you next. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I have a comment, and then I have a question. The comment is, and particularly it refers, the previous caller leads into it, which is, I think it is very, it's essential that when we're talking about water, that we make it totally clear, unmistakably clear, that water is an essential resource for life. It is not a commodity. And when these private bottlers come in and start treating our water resource as a commodity, we get into trouble. And there's a big, big push from a lot of quarters to commoditize water, and we need to really be really clear and vigilant that it is never commoditized, but that it is always considered to be a resource that is essential for life.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, what was the number of the bill that was killed in committee, and who are the committee members who sat on it?
Who sat on the bill? Okay.
Yeah, well, who are the committee members who kept it in committee and didn't prevent it from coming to the floor?
Well, in the Assembly, it was Bill 844, and the Senate Bill 620.
844, and Senate was 620?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe I'll let Jody talk about the people. I think maybe she knows better than I.
Okay.
Well, I can say that despite efforts for compromise and reaching out, they reached a point that when the leadership, such as Senator Miller and Representative Black and other leaders who stepped forward very admirably, like Representative Fred Clark and Representative Corey Mason, they reached a wall a brick wall, essentially, that no matter what compromises or efforts to water it down,
so to speak,
that they recognized that it would still not be successful, it would still not progress out of committee. And at that point, there must have been a recognition that it'd be better to bring it back intact with value next session. And that is where we are hoping to accomplish, to allow it to proceed so we can move forward with this important
Who were the committee members that were putting up the brick wall so that we can act? We can get to them and tell them, don't do that.
Well, essentially, in looking at the committees, I don't have all the lists in front of me. I do know that there were a number of legislators who had expressed resistance and concerns, some of which it was difficult to understand the foundation for it. Those would be Representative Gunderson, Senator Kedzie, Representative Hipsch, others who appear to be interested in proceeding next session if some of those issues can be examined again.
Okay. I don't think Jody and I know all the ins and outs of what the negotiations were, so it would probably be wise, if you're interested in following up, to either contact Senator Miller's or Senator or Representative Black's office, and they could probably fill you in more on some of the kind of negotiations that were happening.
Yeah, because a lot of that negotiation didn't happen in front of cameras, I don't think. It was behind the normal, behind closed doors.
Yeah. I'd like to add, Larry, that I think there was a lot of misconception about this bill around the state, and maybe that's because it seemed to come along rather quickly to people, but as Jody's pointed out, this is a bill about sustainability and resource management, and people need to understand that right now we just do not manage groundwater very much at all, and I think most reasonable people would agree that it's such an important resource that we really should be doing some management. A lot of people, particularly in the ag industry, felt somewhat threatened, like this was going to take their water rights away or something like that. And in my opinion, they really did really little to worry about. In fact, in the long run, it would be a very positive thing for them.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, Darren Von Ruden, it sounds like, though, there were a lot of farmers who are in favor of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, our organization, we've had the stance for quite a few years already now that, you know, groundwater is something that needs to be protected, just because it's something that's so vital to our industry. And if we don't take care of it today, you know, we'll be there for future needs. That, in order to maintain the world's health, good groundwater and drinking water is vitally important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Tom in Thief River Falls says, emailed us and said, I'd like to hear your thoughts regarding the treatment of runoff and aquifer recharge, drainage ditches, flood control, storm sewers, and pavement all impede or reduce groundwater and aquifer recharge. At the same time, we're, as a people, increasing the amount that we pump from those aquifers.
Well, that's a real good point. As we, of course, the source of groundwater is usually very local. Comes from recharge the water that soaks into the ground right nearby, in most parts of Wisconsin. So if we route that water somewhere else with pavement or drainage ditches or lots of houses, that changes the groundwater system, and it is an impact. So that's important that in planning, urban and rural planning, that groundwater recharge is part of that process, part of that planning process.
Yeah. Let's turn to Will in Madison next. Will, hello.
Hello. Has there been any discussion of limitation of pesticides or tracking the use of pesticides, both in the rural and urban setting? My particular concern, because I live in a city, is with urban pesticides. You know, see a lot of lawn treatment companies like Chemlawn. You know, guys walking around with rubber boots spraying things on the ground, and that's got to affect water quality at some point.
That's a good question. The pesticides were not addressed in this particular bill. Pesticides are regulated by the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and they do track the use of most, I believe. But it's and it's something that there is research going on about. Those things weren't really a focus of this bill at all, though.
Okay. Thank you. And Darren, did you want to comment?
Well, I just kind of clarify what Ken said, too, is that any time a farmer purchases a chemical, there's a record of it. And, you know, if they start purchasing more than what they should be for their particular operation, then the Department of Ag generally looks into that to see where those chemicals are being used.
Mm-hmm. Let's turn to Raymond in Eau Claire next. Raymond, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm a hydrogeology major here at UW Eau Claire.
Good for you.
Something that I've heard about but I'm not completely clear on, I was hoping the guest could clarify a little bit. It's my understanding that in order for a bottling company to market their water as spring water, it has to be pumped within a certain distance from a naturally occurring spring. And I know that from a merchandising perspective, the spring waters sell better than drinking water. And so there's a certain encouragement for a company almost financially to go ahead and pump near springs where it has a greater impact on surface water bodies than if they were further away withdrawing, you know, chemically identical water from the same aquifer and selling that as drinking water rather than spring water. I was wondering if that's a significant problem or not.
All right. Thanks, Raymond, for calling. Ken, let's turn to you as the hydrologist.
Well, I believe that's basically correct what the caller said, Larry. As I understand it, and I'm no expert on the rules for spring water, but as I understand it, to call it something spring water, you actually have to show that it depleted a spring in some way. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I believe that's what I have heard. You know, overall, even though people worry a lot about bottling water, and it's an important issue, it's still a rather small water use compared to lots of other things we do, compared to just municipal water supplies or irrigation pumping or a lot of these other things, because there are not that many bottling water plants around. I know, Jody, maybe you know some of the legal rules for those a little better than I.
Well, I can just say in terms of springs, what the caller has identified is correct. And what's, I guess, unfortunate or ironic is that springs are so ecologically and environmentally valuable, even if they're commercially sought as well. And folks listening really need to understand that of the many gaps in legal protection left under Act 310 and what current legislative efforts has been trying to address is the lack of protection for most of the springs in our states. Act 310 has a very high threshold. They protect the biggest springs in our state that flow at 1 cubic foot per second. Most of the springs, 70% of the springs in our state, and I have a number I'm looking at here from preliminary data, of 7,487 springs in our state have no protection under Act 310, have no human eyes looking at impacts called on or at risk by either bottlers or agricultural uses or other high-capacity wells.
Okay. Thanks again, Raymond. Appreciate your call. And Anita in Newport, we turn to you next. Hi, Anita.
Good morning. I'm a part of a farming family farm operation here near Wisconsin Dells, and I certainly treasure the fact that the Department of Natural Resources is trying very hard to protect our precious groundwater. I'm really worried because I know how much water our 300 dairy cows drink. It's a lot. And we clean up our everything. And then I read in the paper the other day that just to the north of us, there is a large CAFO being proposed with more than 4,000 cows. I'm wondering, what about the water that they're drinking? What about the cleanup? Where is all of this water going to come from? How is this being protecting the neighbors who have private wells? And I just really worry. I know what's happened in California for the dairy farmers, I know in Wisconsin, we aren't exactly short of that much milk that we should maybe be allowing this kind of factory agriculture. Can you help us?
All right, well, let me turn to Darren first. Darren, a comment from you?
Yeah. Basically, you know, that's one reason why Wisconsin Farmers Union is supporting this bill is because it's going to have that protection to make sure that if a setup such as the one she was talking about moves into an area, that the neighbors are protected, and it also, you know, with the groundwater management areas that they're talking about too in the bill, if it's not feasible to put a setup such as that in an area, then that type of setup shouldn't be allowed in. And, you know, it boils down to another thing, too. You know, as Americans, do we want to allow our food system to go into the hand control of a few, or do we want to have thousands of family farmers producing our food across the country?
Yeah. And, Jody, do you want to comment as well?
Well, I think this caller brings up exactly what's at issue here, the kinds of questions and the kind of look that we want our state to have the authority to proceed with, to at least have the ability to ask the questions. Will this proposed high-capacity well, which certainly is going to be needed to support that many animals, as you discussed with just 300 for 1,000, 4,000, 500 animals, we're talking a lot of water, and there will be impacts environmentally and otherwise in that area. And we need some type of regulation to allow those questions, those impacts to be looked at. Not necessarily to say no right away, but at least look at it, try to avoid any problems, decrease the risk, or eliminate altogether the problems. If it is determined that a facility of that size is not sustainable, cannot be managed appropriate to the benefit of all those in the area, then that would be the answer that would be come to through reasoned analysis, not just a go-ahead, crossed fingers, and hoping for the best.
And now, and as we conclude here, the bill is bottled up, so we're probably going to see the bill come back next session?
We would hope so. If it's not going anywhere this week, and because we're at the end of the session, it seems unlikely that anything is happening now. Mm-hmm. So we hope it can be worked on next year.
Well, on that note, I thank you all very much for calling. And I guess how you feel on this, get a hold of your legislator and talk with him or her about it. Thank you so much. Darren Von Ruden, thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Yep, thanks, Larry.
Yeah, Darren's president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Jody Habish-Sinekin. Jody, thank you for coming back.
Thank you, Larry.
She's an attorney retained by Midwest Environmental Advocates. And Ken Bradbury, thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Ken's with UW Extension in the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey. So great to have them with us today. And this is certainly not the last time we'll be talking about water. If nothing happens at the end of this session, I'm sure we'll be talking about it during the next session as well. So thanks again to them. We're going to turn our attention to other matters a little bit and talk about hunting a little bit and our declining hunter numbers. A couple of guests, Randy Stark and Carl Malcolm, will be coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.